Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission.
There are two primary arguments that we've raised in support of Jack Phillips. The first argument is free exercise of religion, but there is also a claim that involves artistic expression and freedom of expression for creative professionals.
On the feature today, an interview with one of the lead lawyers in a U.S. Supreme Court case involving the right of a Christian baker in Colorado. In the news, a federal private members bill is set to become law today on palliative care services. That's amid a new push for expanded services in Ontario. CARDIS is out with a new study on the availability of daycare spaces in BC. The results may surprise you. And a look at a campaign by a local ARPA chapter in Alberta, which delivered flowers to local politicians for an entire month.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Bill C-277 is expected to become law today. This is the Framework on Palliative Care in Canada Act, first put forward as a private member's bill by Sarnia Lambton MP Marilyn Gladue. The bill calls for the development of a national palliative care strategy. It passed the House with all-party support earlier this year, and it cleared the Senate last Friday. Royal assent set to happen today. Meantime, there's also a push underway in Ontario to expand palliative care services there. Sam Osterhoff, the MPP for Niagara West Glanbrook, has introduced a bill called the Compassionate Care Act. He says there's a real need for a palliative care framework, specifically in his province.
Earlier this year, the Ontario legislature passed Bill 84, which was the implementation regulation of federal Bill C-14, which legalized assisted suicide. And in that discussion, there was cross-party support for the reality that we need to have improved palliative care services, that we need to make sure people have the choice to die in palliative care and that they're not forced into these situations where they feel they need to perform assisted suicide just due to the nature of their illness. There's so much to do. For example, in Ontario, we have 341 palliative care beds when we need more like 1,300 based on our population.
Osterhoff says the bill is actually quite similar to the federal law that's getting royal assent today.
The important bit that this legislation will do, which is mirrored after Marilyn Gladue's, is it will ensure the minister actually releases a report to the legislature within 6 months of this act passing, and then we'll be issuing follow-up reports every few years with what action has been taken based on those recommendations.
Osterhoff says it's not clear if he'll get all-party support for this, but he is optimistic.
I covet everyone's prayers when it comes to this legislation, and I would urge them to continue to contact their members of provincial parliament to support it. One of the great things that I've had the blessing to have is actually that the Ontario Medical Association, as well as the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, have come out and endorsed it, which is over 70,000 healthcare professionals across the province. So that carries quite a bit of clout with the government. The NDP are going to be supporting it, and really what it comes down to is making sure at least some government members are willing to support it, and that can make the difference.
The bill is slated for first reading this Thursday, the final day before the Ontario legislature rises for the Christmas break. CARDIS Families is out with a new report on daycare vacancy rates in British Columbia. There's a narrative in BC that says there's a crisis in daycare because of a lack of available spaces. But CARDIS Families Director Andrea Morozik says statistics from the government don't actually bear that out.
The point of the report is not to say that no parent ever has a hard time finding non-parental care. In fact, we think that can be stressful because location may not be perfect or the quality may not be high. Ultimately, though, the data still show that there are vacancies and that those vacancies can get up to 50% depending on where you are in the province.
During the BC election campaign earlier this year, the NDP promised $10 a day daycare. The Green Party wanted to make it free. Morozik says those promises seem to be based on ideology rather than hard data.
Sometimes I wonder whether politicians know about this data. It is government data, it's a government report that shows the low utilization rates. In some cases, I think it is ideology. There are people out there who believe the only way to do the care of a child is to have spaces in institutional daycares. There are some sectors who think that any child of daycare age needs to have a space available to them, and until that happens, they will claim there's a shortage. That's a pretty ideological viewpoint, obviously. So I think it ranges from ignorance through to ideology, the response of politicians.
CARDIS did a report earlier this year based on Ontario government statistics, which found that the availability of daycare spaces in Toronto was also considerably higher than figures cited by daycare activists. And finally, a novel engagement campaign for politicians from a local ARPA chapter in southern Alberta. Mark Slingerland helped out with this campaign down in Lethbridge.
Every business day of October, every day that the office was open at our local MLA's offices and our local MP's office, someone associated with ARPA visited them with a card and a couple of flowers. They were personally delivered, and each of the cards for the MP said something about gender selective abortion. Our MP, Rachel Harder, has spoken out against that, and we've thanked her for that. And for the MLAs, this was before the introduction of Bill 24, we again thanked them for their service. The two Lethbridge MLAs are both part of the NDP, and one other local MLA from the opposition, United Conservative Party, and all of those cards, in addition to the thank you, mentioned parental rights in education.
Slingerland says the response to the campaign was varied, but they're pretty sure they had an impact.
The MP responded very positively. Her office was excellent. I'm the principal at Calvin Christian School, and about 10 of our grade 12 students participated in this campaign. Some of them got to meet the MP, others it was days when she was in Ottawa, but received a thank you card that we read to the class and really encouraged their engagement. For the MLAs, it was interesting. It was before Bill 24 was introduced, so that controversy hadn't arisen yet, but you could tell that they were a bit conflicted. Of course, they thanked us for the flowers and for the mention, but I think they wouldn't necessarily expect something supportive and positive from a group like ARPA. And so that every day somebody was showing up with a thank you note and some flowers for them, it seemed to me that they weren't quite sure how to respond.
If you'd like more information on the campaign to perhaps do it in your own writing, you can contact Grassroots Manager Colin Postman.
It's December and month 3 of our 12-step action plan. In this month, we're all going to handwrite a Christmas card. The card can be focused on encouraging and thanking your representative for their service. Something handwritten is going to stand out and be noticed by the government official and their staff. Feel free to include a family picture to make it more personal and to help them to remember you. For more information about the 12-step program, go to arpacanada.ca/12steps.
And we're back on the program. On the feature this week, a look at another legal case with huge implications for freedom of religion. This one is out of the United States. You'll recall that last week on our program, we featured some of the oral arguments that were made before the Supreme Court of Canada in the Trinity Western case. As that podcast was being posted online, the U.S. Supreme Court opened a hearing in a case called Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. This one involves a Christian baker, Jack Phillips, and his fight for the right not to make a wedding cake for a gay wedding. Mr. Phillips was represented before the Supreme Court by the group Alliance Defending Freedom, a Washington-based legal organization that specializes in cases involving religious freedom. Jim Campbell is the senior legal counsel with the ADF. He was co-counsel in this case, sitting at the table alongside Mr. Phillips' lead lawyer, Kristen Wagoner. We've reached Jim Campbell at the ADF offices in Washington, D.C. Mr. Campbell, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to speak to us today.
Thanks for having me.
So this case in Colorado, I mean, I'm sure you've been following a little bit what's going on in Canada. We had the Trinity Western case earlier in the month. The whole notion of religious freedom in universities. Now we have a baker from Colorado who declined to make a cake for a gay wedding, and that wound up before the American Supreme Court. You were in the court for the hearing last Tuesday. Talk to me a little bit about some of the basic arguments that were presented there.
Sure. The case is one that has been around and ongoing for 5 years now. The facts are very, very simple. Jack Phillips is a cake artist. He makes custom cakes to celebrate his clients' life events, including marriages. He was asked about 5.5 years ago to create a cake celebrating a same-sex marriage. He politely declined because of his religious beliefs, but he very quickly told the two gentlemen that he would sell them anything else in the shop or make a cake for them for another occasion. It was simply designing a custom cake to celebrate a same-sex marriage that would conflict with his faith. And so that's sort of the background. That's really all the key facts to the case. And so when the U.S. Supreme Court heard the case last week, it asked a lot of interesting questions. But at the heart of this case is really the freedom of all people, including particularly creative professionals, to live and work consistent with their sincerely held religious beliefs.
I find it interesting that, I mean, the American context is different than the Canadian one. In the Trinity case, the argument was about freedom of association. You know, groups are free to form associations based on various things, including religion. That was the argument that was made. Here we're talking about freedom of expression and a cake artist. I mean, to me, that's a foreign concept. Why not argue the point that there's a freedom of religion piece involved here? Or is that part of the argument? And I'm just not getting it.
It is part of the argument. So there are two primary arguments that we've raised in support of Jack Phillips. The first argument is free exercise of religion, that religious liberty protects the rights of people like Mr. Phillips, who serve everyone but simply can't create certain cakes that express particular messages or that celebrate certain events. We think that people like that should have the right to live and work consistent with their beliefs. So there is a free exercise claim, but there is also a claim that involves artistic expression and freedom of expression for creative professionals.
One of the things that is at stake here, I think, based on what I've been reading about the case, is the whole notion of state anti-discrimination laws that require businesses that are open to the public to treat everybody equally. And I think about 20 states specifically mention the whole sexual orientation piece as part of the requirement for treating people equally. Where does that fit into this equation?
Well, our opponents in the case do make arguments based on those laws, but our response has always been that Jack Phillips serves everyone. He offered to serve these two gentlemen. There's just some cakes that he can't make. And so at the end of the day, really, this is no different than if Jack is asked to make a cake celebrating Halloween, which happens to be another category of cakes that he doesn't make because of his sincerely held religious beliefs. So the case here is no different. He's happy to serve everyone. He's just not able to make every cake consistent with his conscience.
President Trump's Solicitor General Noel Francisco was at the court hearing on the stand representing the federal government. And he told the court that business owners shouldn't be forced to create or contribute to an event they disagree with on the basis of their religious beliefs. One of the analogies he used was an African-American artist who should not be compelled to sculpt a cross that would be used for a Klan service. Is that analogy valid?
I definitely think it is. And if you look at the arguments that the state is making in this case, they've been very clear that they're happy to compel people to either create art or speak messages that are in violation of their beliefs. And so what we have, if you know, we consider this case, are some of the examples you just raised, which is, are we going to force someone who, just because they made a cross, say, for a Lutheran church, now has to make a cross for the KKK or some other sort of white supremacist religious organization? I think not. And I do think that there should be freedom. And so another example is, just like Mr. Phillips should be free to decline to celebrate events and ideas that conflict with his faith, a lesbian graphic designer should be free to decline to create custom flyers that celebrate a religious event opposing same-sex marriage. So this freedom that we're arguing for in this case is a freedom that cuts across ideological lines, is a freedom that everyone should enjoy, and that is the right to live and work consistent with your core beliefs, whether those beliefs are religious or whether those beliefs are based on something else.
It's always kind of a mug's game to predict what a Supreme Court is going to do. I know certainly in our case on this side of the border, nobody knows what's going to happen with the Trinity Western case. Do we get any sense of where the justices are in this case?
I think the one thing that we learned is that the justices see the far-reaching implications of this. So you talked about the Trinity case in Canada, and we've been watching that very closely here in the U.S. We think that that's a very important case. But I think the justices see the implication of this Masterpiece Cake Shop case on issues like that. For example, Chief Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, recognized in his questioning that he was concerned that this sort of a ruling could have implications for organizations like a Catholic legal aid organization that is willing to and that offers pro bono legal services. He was concerned whether this would force them to provide legal services in conflict with their faith. And the state, the gentleman who was arguing the case on behalf of the state, indicated that they very well might be forced to take cases and argue positions that would conflict with their religious beliefs. And I think that shows that while this case, Masterpiece Cake Shop, involves a cake artist, the ramifications are far-reaching. And I think they reach even issues like what you all are dealing with the Trinity Western case in Canada.
Mr. Campbell, we're out of time. Really appreciate this.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed talking to you about this very important case.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.